Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood of CNBC, and this is On Point. So a lot on the line for Congress this week. A government shutdown looms, and one of the biggest bargaining points is a program that affects 9 million children. It's been more than 100 days since funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP, expired. Many states will run out of funds by the end of this month, leaving sick kids without health insurance. This hour on Point, Congress, CHIP, and the children in the crossfire. You can join us on air or online. How's your state affected? Does your family rely on CHIP for health care coverage? Do your patients? We want to hear from you. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we're looking at what's ahead for Congress when it comes to DACA and a potential government shutdown. But first, joining me from Washington is Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. You can find a link to his piece entitled "Parents Agonize Over Their Kids' Health as Funding for Children's Health Insurance Program Remains in Doubt" at our website, onpointradio.org. Noam, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, John.
Let's start with the basics, Noam. Tell our listeners what exactly the CHIP program is.
So CHIP is a government-funded health insurance plan for children, as the name suggests. It was created 20 years ago by a compromise, actually, between Republicans and Democrats and the Clinton administration. And it arose out of a concern among many folks that Medicaid, the traditional government safety net program, while available to very poor families, was missing those kids from working-class families whose parents made too much money to qualify for Medicaid but perhaps couldn't afford or couldn't access commercial health insurance.
So, and am I right that the program arose in the ashes of the Clinton health care attempt to get a nationwide program? They couldn't get it, so then they dropped back and went smaller and decided the most sympathetic targets for a national program would be children.
To some degree, yes, that's true. But it's also, I mean, it also arose out of a sense that there was, in fact, this population of kids who needed health insurance and couldn't get it.
Now, was it set up like Medicaid to be a jointly funded state-federal program, or is it all federal money?
It was a joint state-federal program, but it required Congress to reauthorize the federal contribution to states every few years, and it is because of that requirement that we're in the pickle we're in right now.
Now, given the fact that it's been 100 days since the funding authority expired, has anyone actually lost health care coverage so far? Are we still in a situation where between emergency funds at the federal level and state funds that they have independently are sustaining coverage in all states?
So the simple answer is no. Nobody has lost funding yet, in part because Congress has passed a series of patches to provide short-term funding to states, and states are able to move around money that has not been obligated yet to keep their programs afloat. But I think it's important to note that notwithstanding the fact that no one's been booted out of the hospital or the exam room, there are some very real on-the-ground consequences for the fact that this program has not been reauthorized.
Now, I noted before the fact that this program was created after the attempt to pass what we then called Hillary Care failed. Should this lack of funding, lack of reauthorization for CHIP, be seen in the context of the Republican attempt to kill Obamacare? That is to say, is this a target in the attempt to shrink the federal role in providing health insurance?
I think it's difficult to say that. Clearly, I think it reflects the fact that the governing majority in Congress on the Republican side doesn't put a huge amount of stock in government health plans. You and your listeners will recall, of course, that Congress spent much of the last few months of last year working to craft a major tax bill that cut taxes by $1.5+ trillion over the next decade. That was a higher priority, it appears, certainly, than finding a way to fund this government health plan to provide health insurance to kids.
Norm, I want to play a clip from one of the celebrities who has made this program a higher profile as part of the back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, right and left. Let's take a listen to Jimmy Kimmel. He gave a monologue about chip funding in one of his December shows. While he spoke, he held his son, Billy, who was born with a heart defect and had surgery the previous week. Here's Kimmel urging Congress to act on chip.
I've had enough of this. I don't know what could be more disgusting than putting a tax cut that mostly goes to rich people ahead of the lives of children. Why hasn't chip been funded already? If these were potato chips they were taking away from us, we would be marching on Washington with pitchforks and spears right now.
Noam, critique the accuracy of what Jimmy Kimmel said. Is he got the political dynamics right?
I don't know about the potato chips, but I think he does. I mean, he raises the point that I raised earlier, which is to say that if we look at how Congress spends its time as a reflection of what it considers most important, there is no question that the tax bill was more important than funding the Children's Health Insurance Program last year.
Now, I want to bring in from Topeka, Kansas, Dr. Dennis Cooley. He's a practicing pediatrician. He's chairman of the Subcommittee on Access to Care for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Cooley, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Cooley, Noam was just saying a moment ago that no one has actually lost coverage yet. Does that mean that the 100-day limbo has had no consequences, or has it?
No, I think, and as Norm said, there's some real consequences, even though maybe patients haven't experienced a loss of their coverage. You have to understand what these parents are going through. There's a lot of uncertainty right now. You know, imagine if your child, for example, has asthma, which is not uncommon, and a lot of the CHIP kids are going to be patients who have asthma. You know, you don't know whether or not you're going to have coverage to help you pay for your child's inhalers. Some of these are maintenance inhalers that are going to prevent your child from being sick. You don't know if you're going to have coverage to, for example, receive care from your provider. If your child gets sick with an exacerbation of the asthma, what are you going to do for hospitalizations? Remember, these are working families. These are families that don't have real high incomes, and now they're being faced with looking at choices of, you know, am I going to be able to pay for the care for my child, or are we going to go into debt from it? So there's real consequences that these parents are experiencing.
So a lot of anxiety. Let me ask you in a practical sense, if in fact, I think most people, and Noam, you step in and correct me if I'm wrong, expect that eventually this program is going to get funded and before people do actually lose coverage. More anxiety, but probably not a loss of coverage. But if that were to happen, Dr. Cooley, what would happen in practice? Would doctors provide this and hospitals provide care gratis? Would people not seek care, or are there other programs that these families could move to?
You know, I think that the concern here is that that may be – I've not heard that from Congress, but I do think that there are some people who probably have that feeling that, oh, it's not a big deal, that they're going to receive care from either the providers or they're going to receive care from hospital emergency rooms or safety net clinics, et cetera. I think that's really not true. First off, if you took every CHIP child and removed CHIP and they had to try to seek care in safety net clinics, there's not enough safety net clinics to cover it. Those clinics alone don't provide full care either. They're not going to provide hospital care. They're not going to provide emergency care. They're not going to pay for medications, as I mentioned above. So will children then have to go to the hospitals and receive care through emergency rooms? We all know that emergency rooms do great for emergencies, but when you're looking at non-emergent care, emergency rooms are costly and maybe not the most efficient. So I think you're going to see patients who will not receive care if CHIP is not reauthorized.
Dr. Cooley, I want to play a clip from Joe Manchin, the Democratic senator from West Virginia, who appeared on CBS Face the Nation yesterday. He told John Dickerson, the host, that Congress would reauthorize CHIP this week. Republicans shouldn't tie up funding any longer.
Trust me, we're going to get funding for CHIPs, but to allow it to string on 100 days when it expired 100 days ago, I've got 50,000 West Virginia children. This is wrong, so wrong. Where's your priorities? Where's your values? These are the children, and if you can't give the children a healthy start, then who are we as a country? So this needs to be done. They shouldn't play politics with it.
Noam, is Joe Manchin right?
Well, certainly the kids are caught in the crossfire here. And John, you know, I spent some time about 10 days ago with actually one of Senator Manchin's constituents, a family outside Morgantown, West Virginia, the dad works. He's a truck driver. They don't have health insurance through his job, so they rely on CHIP for their two children, including their 11-year-old son who has type 1 diabetes. And type 1 diabetes, as your listeners may know, is a disease that requires some pretty expensive drugs, some insulin, requires very careful monitoring of blood sugar. And that family, for the last month plus, has been in agony as they've wondered whether or not this program is going to be continued. So for them, this isn't an abstract case of wondering when and what will Congress do. As parents, you can imagine they are scared out of their minds. And like any parents, they are scrambling to figure out what they will do. So even if people say this program is going to get funded, nothing to worry about, what parent would not try to take every step possible to try to protect their children and look for other options on the off chance that it doesn't happen? If as this kid, Bobby Belt's mom, told me, if he doesn't have those drugs, he will die. And so they're busy running around trying to stockpile as much as they can get from the pharmacy before the coverage may run out at the end of the month. It's a pretty harrowing existence for that family.
Noam, I read your story. It was terrific. Quick answer. Are they connecting this to politics, and are they trying to reach out or speak out to their representatives in Congress?
Not yet. I mean, I think they're mainly worried about their two children right now.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back with our guest. We're discussing CHIP funding and what will happen if Congress fails to reauthorize it this week. You can join the conversation. Why do you think this issue, which has bipartisan support, has gotten tied up in Congress? Do you think Congress will reauthorize it? I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about the Children's Health Insurance Program, which covers 9 million kids nationwide. With me from Washington is Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. And in Topeka, Kansas, is Dr. Dennis Cooley, a practicing pediatrician and chairman of the Subcommittee on Access to Care for the American Academy of Pediatrics. And joining me now from Baltimore, Maryland, is Dr. Lena Wen, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner. She's also an emergency room physician. Dr. Wen, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks. Good to be with you, John.
Now, I want to start by taking a caller. Carlos is on the line from Sarasota, Florida. Carlos, welcome to On Point.
John, thank you for taking my call. Mainly, you know, in the state of Florida, we have several issues. One is that the state did not, go with the Medicaid assistance for the Obamacare. But this CHIP menace that we have right now is immoral, and it really has – I can't really find words to describe this behavior from Congress, because it just has no you know, there's no really a good way to explain why they wouldn't extend it.
Does it affect your family?
Yeah, my son has, for 7 years now, has been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. He's obviously in insulin and, you know, medication to maintain his condition. It's very expensive. I mean, between my wife and I, our combined income is, you know, under $80,000 a year. And to add the medication that he needs, it will cost us more than what we pay for our mortgage. I mean, it is just completely out of the realm of reasoning to even conceive why politicians are so focused on getting rid of this program, which is really, in the scheme of things, is very, very minimal to what it puts on the expenses of the state. And I just think that, you know, politicians one more time are you know, showing that their interest on the citizens is mainly just to put them in position of power and not into the position of being, you know, true representatives.
Carlos, I'm sorry that your family is having to go through that, and I hope your child is okay and his medication's not interrupted. Do you fault any particular party or the White House, Congress, Republicans, Democrats?
I'm an independent, but I tend to side with the Democrats just because they seem to have a little bit more concerning agenda. And lately, I've been calling a state representative, Byrne Buchanan, and I have been, you know, very active, my wife and myself, to try to, you know, transpire the message. We know other parents who are in the same boat that basically, you know, it's very uncertain. As a matter of fact, this weekend we ordered one of the type of insulins that my son uses, and we got a note from the pharmacy saying that, you know, the medication was on hold, that we had to wait for 24 hours for an approval from the insurance. And that, you know, gave me big anxiety, to be honest with you, because now basically we have to wait for the insurance to call back and tell us why. This is something that, you know, it's never been an issue. And now all of a sudden, you know, we have a questioning. So I don't know if this is going to translate into them changing the medication. We'll probably have to go to the primary physician to see, you know, our endocrinologist to see if he can, you know, find something different as an alternative. But it's, you know, these are unnecessary things that, you know, society shouldn't have to be even, you know, thinking about these type of problems, because we live in a very rich country, and these are not the things that we should be exposed to. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Carlos, thanks so much for your call, and best of luck taking care of your child. Again, I'm sorry that that's something that you're going through. And Dr. Nguyen, I want to ask you, could you just walk through for our listeners who don't maybe understand type 1 diabetes and what that requires, what a parent has to do to keep their children healthy and safe with that condition? What is needed?
Patients with type 1 diabetes will require constant monitoring of their blood sugars. They need test strips. They need regular visits to their doctor. They need medications on a daily basis. And the complications of type 1 diabetes are many. They include things like kidney failure. They include permanent damage to their eyes. They include going into a coma because their blood sugars are too high. And practicing in the emergency physician, in the emergency room, I've seen patients who have waited too long. And they wait too long not because they don't care or their parents don't care, but because they cannot afford medications, or because they simply, their parents are thinking, if they waited, maybe it would be okay. I mean, I've seen patients come to the ER with seizures and in comas because they simply waited too long. And that kind of delay in care obviously results in poor outcomes. It's also a lot more expensive. And I'm terrified that we're going to go back to these times. You know, the CHIP program has resulted in the percentage of uninsured children decreasing from 14% to 4.5% in two decades. We've seen huge improvements in health. And I would agree with Carlos and so many that it's unconscionable because there is a clear effect on public health, and we shouldn't let this happen on our watch.
I want to play another clip of a from a mother in Texas, Liz Hong, who relies on CHIP funding to provide health care for two of her children. She told KXAN, an NBC affiliate in Austin, that there's conflicting information about whether Obamacare can cover medical expenses for her children if CHIP funding expires, so she's not sure where to go.
My daughter has asthma, so she needs the nebulizer and the inhaler. My son has an anxiety disorder, so CHIP has helped us to be able to get the evals done. It's nerve-wracking. We don't know what we will do, and I've heard that if we try to get on the marketplace, it'll bump us back out. So then that adds another layer of something we have to try and navigate.
Dr. Cooley, any insight on her question as to whether or not Obamacare could cover those expenses if CHIP is not reauthorized soon?
Some of the families that are on CHIP may be able to get on the exchange. That's some, not all. But I think you have to understand that the policies and the programs that are on the exchange are going to be much more expensive. They tend to have higher cost sharing, so that they're going to have higher either copays. They may even have very, very high deductibles, so really a lot of the cost is going to be coming out of the pocket. And they may not cover a lot of the services that CHIP does. One of the great things about CHIP is it provides high-quality care to the children at low cost, and it is designed for children and is age-appropriate. And it many places it will cover mental health, it will cover dental care, et cetera. So not all of the exchange programs are going to cover that. So,
Dr. Cooley, when you say high-quality care, you're talking about the range of services covered?
That's correct. Most CHIP programs work through what's called the EPSDT, or the Early Periodic Screening, Diagnosis, and Treatment Guidelines. And so this provides preventative care, provides treatment coverage, and care for illnesses, care for hospitals. So it really is quality care that these children are receiving. And it has a good benefit profile that the children receive, and that may not be the case in some of the exchanges. And it certainly is going to cost more. The interesting thing, too, to consider is that if you have children moving out of CHIP and going into the exchange, the marketplace, then the government's going to be paying for at least some of the subsidies for that. Some of those costs, as marketplace programs increase, or the policies increase in cost, then some of that cost is going to have to be borne out by the federal government.
Well, Noam, didn't the Congressional Budget Office find that a 10-year reauthorization of CHIP would actually save the government money for precisely the reason Dr. Cooley just said?
Yes. I mean, it's one of the ironies of the situation we're in right now, that one of the hang-ups for reauthorizing funding for CHIP has been the insistence by congressional Republicans that the cost of the program be offset, which under normal circumstances would make a certain amount of sense. But again, that is a contrast with how the tax bill was treated, which was not offset. Now there is no cost essentially to the federal government for reauthorizing CHIP, precisely because the way that those marketplace subsidies are structured are that commercial insurance available through Obamacare marketplaces is more expensive than CHIP.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Sarah on the line from Barre, Massachusetts. Sarah, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Hi, Don. Well, I guess it's more of a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very fortunate that I live in Massachusetts, and I have the fallback of the Massachusetts health system, MassHealth, for my children. The reality is that I have a 3.5-year-old son. He has a condition known as hypoplastic left heart syndrome. In his 3.5 years of life, he's undergone 3 open heart surgeries, all reconstructive in nature. He's had 5 cardiac catheterizations done, all except for one of those required intervention. He's on medications that without the medications, he would die. He would die within a matter of days. He would go into heart failure. He lives in chronic heart failure. And when he was originally diagnosed, I had this incredible feeling of what if I didn't live in Massachusetts? And the answer to the what if I didn't live in Massachusetts was the CHIP program. And without the initial surgery, he would have died. He would have died within a week of birth.
Sarah, does that mean that because of MassHealth, your child is not covered by CHIP?
He is covered under MassHealth. I did have to call MassHealth to confirm that we were not. I was in the process of doing some other paperwork to maybe transition into a different program. And when the CHIP program, you know, came about with all these problems, I immediately stopped all the paperwork and said, no, we're going to stay with MassHealth. It's the safer place to be for him. But it gets me thinking that congenital heart defects affect 1 in 100 live births in this country. And we've had Jimmy Kimmel come out with his son, and he's been such an amazing advocate for our community. But we're a huge population. There's a huge population of children. And the thing that's really, really scary is that without the CHIP program, without the protection of coverage for pre-existing conditions, it leaves these children incredibly vulnerable. It leaves their families vulnerable. My son has racked up $500,000 in medical bills in 3 years. If
Wow.
he did not have access to coverage, you know, it would have been lose the house, lose everything. You know, and what are your options at that point? You're looking at a child with these kind of problems and you can't get coverage. You can't help your child. You are given the option of comfort care with these children, which is a horrific thing to hear when you're a mother, is that you have the option to opt for comfort care, do nothing, and watch your child die. And what makes me think is without these programs, there are going to be families that have to make the kind of decision that says, do we lose our livelihood? Do we lose our homes? Or do we watch our child die because we simply could not afford the treatment? And this is America. These are the kind of things that should never, never face a family in this country.
Sarah, I think every parent, and I'm one of them, would agree with you that that is the most heartbreaking set of circumstances a parent could find. I'm very glad that you're feeling secure because of MassHealth. And I want to ask Dr. Nguyen from Baltimore, what about people in your state of Maryland? Is there a state backstop that is high quality that parents like Sarah would be able to lean on in the event that CHIP funding doesn't materialize?
First, I want to address Sarah's point. I'm a new mother myself. I have a 5-month-old son, and I can't imagine even being faced with that choice, knowing that we live in this country with the most advanced medical care, but that somehow because of inability to pay, that we are being rationed out of the ability to save the lives of our most vulnerable children. I mean, I can't imagine that. And I think this is why the issue of not having funding for CHIP, it bothers me and it bothers all of us so much on a visceral level. I mean, we're talking about coverage for immunizations. This is about everybody's health, not just about the individual's health, but about everybody's health. And we're talking about pregnant women too, because CHIP in 19 states covers 37,000 pregnant women. And women who do not get prenatal care are 5 times more likely to have children who die than women who do. So it just, anyway, it's I appreciate Sarah raising the point, but it's something that I can't imagine as parents facing. In Maryland, there is a lot of uncertainty and confusion, as I think there is in other states. Our governor here in the State Department has said that they intend to protect children's health insurance, even if we do not get the federal funds for it. But how that'll be done is unclear. There are also a lot of other uncertainties. For example, CHIP also covers other programs in our state, not just for children's health insurance, but it also covers parts of other programs like lead poisoning prevention. So if that funding goes away, what's going to happen?
Dr. And Cooley, how about you? In Kansas, is there a state backstop that could be an effective last resort for parents?
In Kansas, what our Medicaid and CHIP directors have said is that they will try to move CHIP enrollees over to the Medicaid program. There's a number of things, though, that's going to be problematic with that. Is that
how do they do that if the families didn't qualify in the first place?
Right, they're going to. That's one of the problems that they'll have to do. They'll have to get some changes that are done in eligibility. In addition, If you switch CHIP patients over, enrollees over to Medicaid, the federal portion that goes for Medicaid is usually less, significantly less a lot of times, than what it is for CHIP. So your state costs are going to go up significantly. So when that happens, and then if you have a state like mine in Kansas, we're financially stressed. We are kind of trying to dig ourselves out of a hole.
I've noticed you've had some budget problems the last couple of years.
We've had a few, yes. So, you know, how are we going to be able to cover those extra costs? And states are going to have to ask themselves, are they going to put a cap, for example, on how many patients are enrolled? Are they going to cut some of the benefits? You know, what are they going to do for this? And so while I think a lot of states are saying that they have some contingency plans in place, right now it's really very very much unknown exactly what states are going to do, and especially my state. I'm not sure how my state's going to handle this.
Dr. Dennis Cooley, Dr. Lena Wen, Noam Levy of the Los Angeles Times, hold right there. We're discussing concerns over CHIP funding and what to expect from Congress. You can join the conversation. Is this a public health issue? How will your community, your state, be impacted if Congress doesn't reauthorize CHIP? I'm John Harwood. This is On Point.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about Congress, CHIP, and the children affected. You can join the conversation. What do you see Congress doing on CHIP? My guests today are Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times, Dr. Lena Wen, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, and Dr. Dennis Cooley, a pediatrician in Topeka, Kansas, and former president of the Kansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Noam, one of the things that's difficult for people to follow are some of the ins and outs of the debate over reauthorization. I want to play something that House Speaker Paul Ryan recently told ABC's Good Morning America about the CHIP program's funding, and he was predicting at that point it would be funded before the end of 2017. Take a listen.
Will you fund the Children's Health Insurance Program before heading home for Christmas?
Yeah, we will. As you know, the House, we already passed this bill. We passed on November the 3rd a full funding of and a full extension of the CHIP bill. The Senate has not done that. So obviously, we would like the Senate to follow through and pass something. We passed an interim measure since we passed the full funding measure, and we'll do something once again before the end of the year to make sure that those states don't get hit with any CHIP cuts.
Noam, can you translate into English what the speaker was saying? And is his statement that we passed the bill, does that mean that the fault in this situation lies entirely with the Senate?
No, not entirely. It is true the House passed a version of the bill. As I mentioned earlier, one of the hangups here has been how do you offset the cost of providing this insurance? The House Republicans have proposed to pay for CHIP coverage by cutting other public health spending, raising Medicare premiums for some higher income seniors and some other offsets, which are sort of non-starters on the Senate side. So the way that this is paid for has been something that's been an obstacle on the Hill. Although, as I mentioned, the latest analysis from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office is that actually, perversely, funding CHIP for another 10 years would actually save the federal government money because it's more expensive to provide health insurance for some of these children through other means such as the ACA marketplaces.
I think the word of the day for the situation is perversely, as you just said. Let's go to the calls. We've got Carlene on the line from Buffalo, New York. Carlene, welcome to On Point.
Yes. Hi, John. I'm an RN for 38 years. The stress on these families is going to be even more critical because of all the states that have not expanded Medicare. The adults have already been, in many cases, without health care themselves, and they have to deal with seeing their children now have to go through that. It's got to be a totally incredible stress on families. And then having to go back to the old days of using the emergency rooms for health care and for preventable crises. That's horrible for everyone involved, from the patients to the families to the hospital staff and even the running of a hospital.
Carlene, let me ask you from a nurse's perspective, are most of the cases that are relevant to this discussion about very severe conditions like the heart defects and the type 1 diabetes we've discussed with previous callers, or are there more routine preventative care cases that are also going to have big consequences?
Children who have asthma attacks, they may be mild or severe. Children who get bronchitis, they could go to a doctor, their own personal physician. They could have, if they have repeated respiratory issues, they could have medication at home that they could use instead of having to, while very short of breath, be rushed to an emergency room.
Wow.
There are so many things that could happen.
And one thing before I let you go, what would you expect to happen if, as a nurse who sees patients every day, if the funding expires, will the care be provided anyway, or will people not get it?
Public hospitals have to give the care. However, they will not get reimbursed. They have certain, I guess, charity funds that they can use, which will probably run out pretty quickly. And then hospitals will have to be hiring fewer people. You'll probably see layoffs where we already have nursing shortages. It's not going to be pretty.
Carlene, thanks so much for your call. Dr. Nguyen, expand on that, what you heard from Carlene.
I agree that we'll see many effects if we're making families choose once again about whether to delay care or to get care or to make trade-offs with food and rent and other things. When we talk about the types of care that's provided, it's not just emergency care for patients with diabetes and seizures. It's also for more routine things like dental care that's guaranteed under CHIP. And we have to think about where these funds are going to be coming from, too. If states are now having to backfill, What else are we going to take away from? We're in the middle, for example, of an opioid epidemic. We all acknowledge that a lot more funding needs to come into this. So are states now going to take away from treating addiction and treating mental health that are critical issues in order to pay for children's health insurance, which is also a critical issue?
Dr. Cooley, let me ask you this question politically. You've got a Republican governor, Sam Brownback, who went to very deep tax cuts, then you had the budget crises that we alluded to before, the states trying to climb out of that hole. You've got two Republican senators in Kansas, Pat Robertson and Jerry Moran. Do you connect this situation to the Republican Party, or do you think this is – and your representatives in Kansas who represent the party in the Senate and the House – or do you think this is political bickering for which both sides have a lot of blame?
You know, I'm not going to point fingers, and I think that probably is not going to be very constructive. I will say that our two senators that you mentioned, Senator Roberts and Senator Moran, have both supported CHIP in the past. And in the past, if I'm not mistaken, Senator Roberts has actually been one of the co-sponsors for some of the reauthorizations. So I think that The discouraging thing is that everybody is in favor of CHIP. Everybody supports CHIP. It's just that somehow or another in the whole process system, it hasn't been reauthorized. And I'm sure there's plenty of blame that you could point to everybody. But, you know, I think that kind of is just going to get us into not getting this thing passed. It needs to be passed. It needs to be passed right now. And, you know, what we'd like to see is certainly a reauthorization of the funding for at least 5 years. And as has been mentioned before, I think 10 would be great. We want to see the continuation of the 23% bump that went to the states. We'd like to see certainly eligibility requirements, benefits all stay the same. So, you know, I don't want to get into a blame game. I don't think that's going to be very productive.
Dr. Dennis Cooley, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Noam Levy, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
And Dr. Lena Wen, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
In a moment, we'll be talking with Politico's Sung Min Kim about what's ahead this week in Congress. It's a huge debate over keeping the government open, over DACA, the Dreamers, and over the CHIP program. This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. CHIP isn't the only major issue Congress needs to address this week. Also on the table, a potential DACA deal for the Dreamers. The president said DACA is probably dead, but members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are promising to get a deal done. We're looking at what's ahead in Congress this week as a government shutdown looms. Joining me now from Washington is Sung Min Kim. She covers Congress for Politico. Sung Min, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
Well, let me start by putting you on the spot. Are we going to have a shutdown? Are the Dreamers going to be protected? And is CHIP going to be reauthorized?
So the first one, I don't know. Ask me maybe again Wednesday or Thursday whether we're going to have a shutdown. On the deal on the Dreamers, I will say it does seem to get a little bit more complicated after the controversy erupted in the Oval Office after the president made those comments about certain immigrants from Haiti and Africa. We'll have to assess what the sentiments are like on Capitol Hill after those remarks. And in terms of CHIP getting reauthorized, like you mentioned on your segment earlier, it's one of those things that everybody on Capitol Hill seems to agree needs to get done and is just somehow not getting done.
Would you say that the people who are going to make the crucial decisions about these, all of the major issues we were just talking about, is it the very same people? Or do you have a group of DACA negotiators, a group of CHIP negotiators, and a group of appropriators who are all in separate conversations that have to come together?
There are a bunch of different discussions that are going on, but you have to look at what we always call the big four, which is Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer, because the fact that we have to do these short bursts of funding is the fact that we don't have a broader budget deal, what we call a spending caps deal that sort of sets the spending levels for each agency of government. And though the big four leaders have to agree on that, but Democrats say we're not going to agree to a caps deal unless, well, first of all, that domestic spending gets the same amount of funding as military funding. That's been a sticking point for some time. But Democrats are saying we're not going to agree to a caps deal unless we get a broader agreement on DACA, on these Dreamers, an agreement on health care, on CHIP that we can all live with, and some other issues as well that kind of come underneath those provisions. So with that in mind, while there may be a lot of discussions going on, I mean, right now on immigration, we're not only looking at a group of Senate bipartisan negotiators, but we're also looking at a group of the number twos in each chamber. So that's Steny Hoyer, Kevin McCarthy, Dick Durbin, and John Cornyn. But really, the decision makers are really looking at the top four here.
Now, you mentioned the top four. Where does Donald Trump fit into that? And do his interests coincide precisely with those of the Republican members of the Big Four?
So Donald Trump is clearly looms large because it's the president who has to sign these bills. He has to sign. He's the one who's going to sign an immigration deal into law. He's the one who's going to be signing a budget bill or short-term bills that stave off of a government shutdown into law. And you see, he's aligning with Republicans here in the fact that he keeps stressing the need to make sure that funding for the military isn't compromised by agreements that Republicans say are independent of these funding negotiations, such as immigration and others. But on immigration, he is now, you had some senators who were trying to persuade him on board with their deal, such as Dick Durbin of Illinois, the Democrat, and Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, who is a Republican senator who's had a Donald Trump's ear, particularly for the last several months, you know, golfing on the golf course together. But it seems like the president in recent days has aligned against that plan and aligned more with Republican leaders who say that deal is just not going to fly.
Although I must say, Sungmin, it's very difficult to tell from one day to the next the meaning of Donald Trump's words, because he may take one position one day that has no connection to the position the next day. I want to play a clip of something he told reporters yesterday about his thoughts on the prospects that a DACA deal would happen and how he felt about Democrats.
Honestly, I don't think the Democrats want to make a deal. I think they talk about DACA, but they don't want to help the DACA people.
Is that true?
I would say, I mean, in all my experiences of talking with Democrats, not only in these recent DACA talks, since the president announced he would cut off the program, but also just talking with them for the past 5 or 6 years just on this immigration issue, it's hard to take that at face value. One of them, for example, this is a major priority for people like Senator Dick Durbin, who initially wrote the DREAM Act back in 2001. So 17 years ago, this has been an issue that has been near to his heart, he has pushed for, but also think of the political pressure. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, other Democratic leaders are under tremendous pressure from their base to get a Dreamer deal, because their communities are seeing, you know, almost even right away, they're seeing impacts of, you know, the president's immigration policy. They will see the impacts of rescinding DACA so much more sharply once the March 5th deadline arrives. So this is the Pelosi and Schumer are under pressure to deliver, not just make this a political issue.
Sungmin, I want to offer an observation and get you to react to it. It seems to me that this is a situation Democrats were already needed to keep their votes to keep the government open. The Republicans do not want, after a volatile first year, poll numbers dropping, to have a government shutdown. Don't the president's comments last week to Senator Durbin and others that have spurred so much condemnation, hasn't that destroyed whatever leverage the Republicans have in this discussion? And don't they realistically have very little alternative but to give a whole lot of ground by the end of the week?
It depends on, I mean, you have to also look in terms of passing these really short-term government bills. The Republicans have actually shown in these last couple go-arounds, particularly back in December, that they are able to pass at least short-
One-month funding bills?
Well, it's not a great way to run. It is no way to run the government. But right now they're looking at a funding bill that runs through February 16th. And if Ryan can keep most of his caucus together, and there are a handful of Democrats in the Senate who don't want to have to do anything with the government shutdown, if those dynamics are still the same, then I think that you could at least avert temporarily a government shutdown at the end of this week. However, those comments have emboldened Democrats who say Donald Trump doesn't really want an immigration deal, or the provision that he is asking for, whether it's cutting off this diversity visa lottery or limiting the ability of family members to sponsor one another for a green card into the United States.
Right.
That doesn't come from a policy place. It comes from a more sinister place in their Democrats' views. So how much that is...
Sungmin Kim, thanks as always for your time today. We're out of time. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook. Coming up tomorrow, Haitians calm their war jitters, and the U.S. military quietly prepares for war. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.